The book of Revelation, Chuck, some call it the apocalypse. Interpret this for us. Is it a message? Is it something for us to use as a guide to change our lifestyles, or is it something that will happen?
Well, all of the above. I think that it's interesting. It's the only book in the Bible that has the audacity that says, read me, I'm special. All through the Bible, you find admonitions to read the Bible in a collective sense. But only one book in the entire collection of 66 of them says, read me, I'm special, and if you do, you get a special blessing. And it makes that commitment several times in its pages. And the discovery that you need to make is that that book is in signs. And every, in other words, if I can code, but every sign or every semim, if you will, is alluded to somewhere else in the Bible. In other words, it takes for granted that you have the rest of the Bible at your fingertips, because every phrase, every idiom that it uses is explained somewhere else in the Scripture. So it becomes a treasure hunt. As you study the book of Revelation, every time it uses a phrase or an identity of some kind, that is explained somewhere else in Scripture. And you quickly discover, as you study the book then, that it ties together all the rest. And so it's like a treasure hunt. I remember I first encountered a lecturer that pointed out to me when I was a teenager, and that's a long time ago. It's more than six decades ago. The point is, that put me on a treasure hunt that I've spent the rest of my life on. And the more you study the book, the more you start developing a respect for the precision of the idioms that it uses from all the rest of it. And that's probably one of the reasons it's such a rich blessing, is you begin to realize that the entire package, not just the book of Revelation, but the total 66 books, starting with Genesis 1 all the way through, is a deliberately designed package. And the ribbon on that, so to speak, is the last book, the book of Revelation. The first chapter introduces 24 identities of Jesus Christ. And those 24 identities then are used all through the rest of the book to tie things together. The most important chapters of the book are chapters 2 and 3, because that deals with seven churches. And those seven churches typify and model and identify the entire church age from the time of Acts chapter 2 all the way through to the end. And so the part that is relevant for you and me is in chapter 2 and 3. From chapter 4 on is this climactic, wild end-time drama that is yet ahead of us. But the part of it that, we directly are involved in, directly connected to, is chapters 2 and 3. So, strangely enough, those two chapters are the most important in the book from a practical point for you and me. The speculations of a lot of the rest of it are interesting, but really secondary to our primary purpose. But the book obviously deals with the climax of the planet Earth, and the climax of man's inability to govern himself. And you alluded to that earlier today, that we're seeing the geopolitical crises increase worldwide. Sure. The world is conditioning itself for a leader that's going to give them security, and that leader is going to lead us to the ultimate form of tyranny. And that's one of the things the Bible warns us through all the way through, and that the world is going to embrace a form of tyranny that'll be disastrous. And that is the ultimate climax that is interrupted, of course, by the return of Christ himself. But in the meantime, man wants to run things himself, and he's going to discover that he can't. And right in the middle of this, of course, you have Satan preparing his super guy in the wings, and that'll be coming forward. And I think it's a waste of time to speculate on him because of some intervening events. But I think the book of Revelation is probably, in my own experience of more than six decades of this kind of study, it's the most fruitful and rewarding of all the studies in the Bible. to study it properly will take you into most of the rest of the Bible. But the point is, it's a great place to start if you go at it with respect and assume it knows and take it for what it says. Be careful of allegories. Allegories are a license to invent. You want to understand what those idioms mean, but the way you unravel what those idioms mean is to find out where else they're used in the Bible. One of the most powerful tools that you can have in Bible study is a concordance. That's an index of, if you've got a phrase or a word, it shows you every place it occurs, and that's the way you can track down some concept. If you're trying to take a particular word, it'll show you every place that is used throughout the Scripture, and that's one of the ways you track back from a particular reference to the book of Revelation where else it's used, and you discover very quickly that the consistency of use of those idioms are astonishing, independent of who the author is. In other words, you've got these 40 different authors that over the 2,000 years that have been writing, but you discover their use of idioms is consistent and it often includes truths that were far beyond the horizon of the guy that was writing it. And you begin to realize that it was superintended, if you will, supernaturally.
And when you discover that,
it changes your whole perspective.
Tell us about the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Well, the four horsemen, of course, have become an idiom in literature. But obviously, what's going to be unleashed here is four forces, if you will. The first one is the guy on a white horse, and he's the guy that many people misunderstand. That's not Christ. That's the false Christ that comes, because he's riding in bad company.
Mm-hmm.
He's, hell and death ride with him. And then you've got the green horse, the pale horse, the chloros horse, which is inflation and famine. And you also discover, if you study famine throughout history, you discover that it's more often than not a political tool, not a real shortage of something. It's something that's been induced for some other agenda purpose. But in any case, those four horsemen are the ones that lead to the chaos that's going to surface this leader that goes by in many titles. He has 33 different titles in the Old Testament, 13 in the New. We typically call him the Antichrist, but that's a misnomer in a sense, because in the Antichristos in the Greek really means in the place of. Yes, he's against Christ, but the real concept in the Greek is that he's in the place of Christ, and he's the one that the world embraces in lieu of the one they should be embracing. And he's the one that's going to bring, obviously, disaster. And the nature of those disasters, of course, are codified in chapter 6 through 19, the main bulk of the book. And things get straightened out at the end, of course, in chapter 19 through the end, 20, 21, 22. So without getting into the choice of idioms, each of those idioms is a fascinating study of its own right. We published a commentary which takes 24 one-hour sessions with diagrams to go through the book, if you will. So it's hard to take it in pieces in just a few sound bites on a AM broadcast. But the point is, the real message of them, though, is to recognize that the entire book is in code, but every code is expressed and anticipated elsewhere in the Bible.